Adult Authors. I'm Joanne Morrell, children's and young adult fiction writer and author of Short Nonfiction for Authors. Thanks for joining me for the Hybrid Author Podcast, sharing interviews from industry professionals to help you forge a career as a hybrid author, both independently and traditionally publishing your books. You can get the show notes for each episode and sign up for your free author pass over at the Hybrid Author website to discover your writing process, get tips on how to publish productively, and get comfortable promoting your books at www.hybridauthor.com.au. Let's crack on with the episode. Hello, authors. I hope you're all keeping well in whatever part of the world you reside and listen to the podcast in. Today's interview is a mid-year mashup of all guests appearing on the show since 2025. Episode 151, Overcoming the Shadows, John Walker Patterson on triumph, vulnerability and inspiring through memoir. Episode 152, million copy best-selling author Jacqueline Harvey on creating a thriving career in children's fiction and navigating a changing publishing landscape. Episode 153, Relentless Pursuit, Junior Bernard on overcoming adversity and turning survival into inspiration. Episode 154, Dana De Silva on writing erotica. Episode 155, Living with Split, Maggie Walters on the journey of multiple personality disorder and the power of storytelling. Episode 156, A.M. Jackson on balancing romance and suspense in the Love Connection series, Suarez's story. Episode 157, Susie Samuel, revising a bestseller in The Dark at the Threshold. Episode 158, Uncovering Truths in Young Adult Fiction, Karen Cunningham, on writing and self-publishing, Missing Sarah Harris. Episode 159, Shane Simonson, on self-publishing books versus blogging on Substack. Episode 160, How Poetry Serves as a Form of Healing and Self-Discovery with Jesse Vong. Episode 161, Stephen Whiteside, on writing narrative nonfiction, Australian History, Snow, Fire and Gold. Episode 162, Deborah Pike, on what to do after your first novel is published. Episode 163, The Power of Podcasts to Connect People Through Compelling Storytelling and Meaningful Conversations with Devin Blair. Episode 164, Reigning in Regency, D.G. Rampton, on crafting timeless romance and thriving as a hybrid author. Episode 165, Sandy Parsons on self-publishing children's fiction overseas. Episode 166, Christopher Chen on addressing big themes in children's literature with sensitivity. Episode 167, Joanne Merrick on empowering readers to make informed decisions. Episode 169, Writing Good Mystery Books for Kids in Outback Noir with Rosie Chanel. Episode 171, Embarking on Adventures, Yarn Quest and the Magic of Children's Fantasy with Brooke Scobie. Episode 172, Retirement Money Secrets with Stephen Selengut. And episode 163, How to Elevate Your Life and Business to a Higher Level with Rich Kodak. So in my author adventure this week, I must apologise that I have a cold, so I'm a little bit nasally, might be a bit sniffy, might be a bit coughing through talking, obviously try and edit where I can, but that's the reason if my voice sounds a bit funny. We've just had a long weekend here in Perth, which is really great. We're stepping into winter now. It's June, mid-year. That's why we're celebrating our mid-year mashup. Can't believe it. You always feel that way though when you look back and you think, I can't believe, you know, where's the time gone? And I think if you actually wrote down the things that you've done and achieved, like, you know, you've done so much. And I know that I have done a lot up to this point. I feel like I can't remember half of it, but it's definitely there. I went out to the country with my partner and his family for the long weekend with my children as well. And it was really nice just to get out there and see a different way of living. Everything was miles from everything. And you actually felt like you were away from everything. It was a really nice feeling, actually, really peaceful, really serene, to have a cup of tea and watch some cows and sheep walking past and just stillness and quietness. I crave that in my life. When we came home, I noticed how squashed everyone feels living in suburbia. It was much different, but had a great time. It was interesting watching the children play together. They were, you know, although they're out on farms, they went out into the paddocks and things like that. But my children especially, oh goodness, you know, we want to make a movie. And it was like, okay, so probably anything to hold on to their technology. But it was interesting to notice that with ChatGPT, they were using it to create the film scripts, then shooting it from their phone and acting. It's interesting just to see how they're using this sort of technology. And it kind of feels like, well, no, they didn't create the script. They didn't create the story, but they were certainly acting it out. So what does that mean? Does that mean creativity is less, or one side of creativity is heightened, you know, acting, the physical presence of being only what we can do as humans is elevated over your, you know, the creativity within? Yeah, it really got me thinking. Watching my child when she came back, she said, to be honest, she struggles, I think, with homework and stuff like that. And she is a high school child and she's getting help and things, but I feel like she's got a certain age, especially at her age, and she's got to take responsibility for her own organization, her own teachings. I, as a parent personally, I can't take on it doing everything for her, because that's not going to help her in later life. She needs to do these things herself. And yeah, so I think that she's not turned in a homework in time. And she has, I think she has actually put it in ChatGPT to take to school. And it's going to be very interesting to see what comes of that and the teachers. And I've said to her point blank that they're going to know right off the bat that she never wrote what she's handing in, because I couldn't even write as good as that. The way that this thing has pumped out, it's supposed to be like some sort of interview. And so I've said to her, if I was you, I wouldn't even hand it in. Ask for an extension, but I think she's got ahead to do it. So I want to see what happens, actually. But yeah, it's interesting to see how these technologies are being used by the younger generation, but then also with us as well as authors and creatives and writers. Should we be thinking about how we can enhance our work to be more physical? What is it about our work that we can do that, you know, the computer can't? How hybrid are you? A hybrid career is about flexibility and adaptability. It's blending revenue streams, books, services, speaking, diversifying streams such as teaching workshops or courses, online courses, in-person workshops or webinars or writing, self-publishing or marketing, freelance writing or editing, writing articles, blogs or copy for clients, offering editing services, offering coaching or consulting for writers seeking guidance on craft, marketing or publishing, creating Patreon or Substack communities, build a paid community for fans, offering exclusive content or sneak peeks, podcasting or speaking events, host or guest on podcast panels and conferences. How are you diversifying your income stream as an author? It's not a new concept. People have been talking about this for ages. Very much write the book, get it published, and that's where your job stops as an author is way, 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 way in the past, if it ever even was there. There's so much that you can build on from just writing a book. You know, businesses use a book as a lead magnet, which is to get people into their business. Books are very powerful. They can act as a stepping stone into other things. And we might not want to go in these directions, but it's good to have a diversified income stream. So if one is not working and the other does, then it's good, as they say, not to put all the eggs in the one basket, a little country saying, seeing as I was in the country at the weekend. So this episode is sponsored by my imprint, Sanguine Press. Feel good, fast-paced, emotionally charged women's contemporary fiction, The Writer, The Hairdresser and The Nurse, intertwines the struggles and dynamics of three women's working family and romantic relationships, leaning on their longtime friendship to help get them through. And my short non-fiction for authors, Author Fears and How to Overcome Them. How many times have you said your writing's crap or shied away from calling yourself an author? Take comfort in knowing your author fears are valid. Other writers feel the same way you do, but are not letting fear stop them from putting themselves out there. We're all feeling the fear, but doing what we love anyway. And you can too. And freelance writing, quick tips for fast success. Starting a freelance writing business? Place yourself in the pro position before you've met with your first client. Invest 1 hour gaining 60 plus quick tips to save yourself time, money and stress discovering the little but important factors previously unconsidered, never having worked directly with clients before. Books come in ebook, print, and some audio, and range from $10, $15 to $28.
Without a doubt, you know, right from the heart, but I think there are still dark thoughts in the canyons of my mind. Admittedly, yes, but I think there definitely is a catharsis in writing about illness. And I think very importantly, there must be so many people out there with, you know, other life-threatening illnesses, not just cancer, who could do a real whole host of good and help others in the same predicament as well. So, you know, if you're one of those people, then get your pen and paper out and start writing. It's not as difficult a pathway as people think it is.
One of the things that you can do to get yourself noticed is enter competitions. Find reputable competitions to enter. So, I mean, I got my break because I won a competition which was at the time called the Frustrated Writers Mentoring Competition, which was run by the Children's Book Council of New South Wales, but they now have a much fancier name for it. I think it's the Charlotte something or other prize. It's basically the same thing. But you know, being able to get a foot in the door with publishers is really important. And these days, there's quite a lot of festivals, like the there's the CYA festival in Brisbane, there's the Kids and YA festival in Sydney, and there's places where you can actually get to meet publishers and get to meet people in the business. And I always think, you know, those sorts of things didn't exist when I was starting out. So to have that opportunity is fantastic. I always say to people, be present, but don't be pushy.
Yeah.
I know how desperate you can feel to get in front of a publisher, but please don't follow them to their, you know, one of my publishers in America, someone presented her with a manuscript at her mother's funeral. And,
oh my
gosh,
that's worse than the under the toilet story.
Yeah, so it's a bit like the under the toilet stall door.
Yeah.
But this one was at her mother's funeral. So she was, you know, most unimpressed by that one.
Oh.
So I think, when you're starting out, you need to be, be willing to... be respectful, absolutely be respectful. But also, being a writer these days, it's different to what it would have been 30, 40, 50 years ago. You know, friends and I were talking about this the other day, that, Enid Blyton never had to do social media or, like go on TV or whatever.
Although, and her books are still selling.
Exactly.
Persistence is everything. You cannot write a book without persistence. And one thing people need to remember, don't ever look at the full picture as you start doing the writing. It will drive you crazy. I'm just take it one step at a time, focus on that one chapter or that one page, or even the first three paragraphs you have to do for the day. And don't worry about the full picture, because it's really scary, because the book is a lot of work. But if you try to have fun with it and don't even think about when it's going to be done, just do it as you go and really try to enjoy it. You will persist without even thinking about it. But persistence is everything in writing. And it's such an experience that you will be so proud that you took the time to write the book.
Write as if no one's going to read it. I always try and do that. I try not to censor myself and get that first draft of the scene out, however it wants to come out. I think for me, what has worked is not worrying about how it's going to sound or trying to make the scene beautiful, just presenting it completely raw. And like you said, it's a very sensory experience. I love music, so I often play songs on repeat. When I was traveling, I was always playing certain songs along the way.
There's a main character going through life, and in the background you've got this chorus
of
people doing all these different things behind them. It would be hysterical. And that's probably one of the really things that's really important to me about this story is, yes, there's trauma, but the other side of that, it's about the healing and it's about the growth journey and about how there is always hope. There's always a way to move forward. And so the first 50 pages or so is full of pretty intense trauma, but the rest of it is about how I and my alters explore how we can live a healthy life.
It's balancing that with giving the reader a breath. It's like in a movie, if you want action, that's great, but you need to kind of sit back. The real softer parts, which I love putting in, are the romantic parts, give the reader a bit of a breather, but hopefully they still want to turn the page and get engaged.
Went to France, bought a big old rundown pile, converted it into flats. And also, a lot of it is based on my own psychic experiences, because for some reason, I've had a lot of contact with the dark side. I mean, totally unwanted, totally uncalled for, but from places I've been to, houses I've lived in, whatever. And a lot of the actual threat, if you like, I've actually experienced. And it's partly written, I don't know if this is conscious or not, but what I do feel is that I need to get the message across to people that meddling is very dangerous. You don't know what you can stir up. And I think now it's quite fashionable for people to... I was looking at reading an article in a magazine the other day about how in England, it's very fashionable now to have this interest in witchcraft and ghosts and stuff like that.
I think the main challenge that I do face as a self-published author is a stigma from bookstores who will assume that because a big publisher hasn't produced my book that it's crap, and that's not true. And I'm actually not sure that I have overcome this, but I have made sure to work with an editor to get my story as good as I possibly can. I always offer a free copy so they can see the quality. Only a few people have taken me up on that. It's generally either yes if they're supportive and they're open to alternative publishing, or just a very firm no, we don't take self-published authors. And there's not much I can do to change their mind if they're already set on that. Learning slowly that it's a them problem and not necessarily a me problem.
Heinlein was completely against the modern obsession with editing and rewriting and just like chopping and changing and like agonizing over every word. His writing habit was to write a new short story every week and just keep churning out things and not going back over them too much. As you're developing your writing skills, you can train yourself to expect to have to do all huge amounts of like painful editing, or you can train yourself to get it mostly right on the first try. Remember the old days, people would write essays in class by hand, and there's a set of skills you need in planning and execution so you don't have to cross out whole paragraphs and waste time. The ease of editing on digital platforms like Word on a computer has drawn us towards doing more editing than we really need to do. So yeah, I'd encourage people to look up Heinlein's Rules of Writing.
If the poetry was so touching, not on just a personal level, but a universal or like community level that I was dealing with. So it was really interesting to see their reactions. It did rhyme. It did have a pattern, and it open and closed very sequentially, and it was really inclusive. It wasn't just personal. It was very like how other people saw my grandma and how I saw hers.
Evelyn Piper, who was the woman who lived in the hut, she had died in 1976, and she had a son who had married. He had also died, but his widow was still alive. And 20 years ago, she told me she had sent me a package of information that was Evelyn's personal papers. Never arrived. I never got them. And then I was in touch with her son, Sam, for many years. And then Sam died a couple of years ago. And then last year, I got an email from Sam's daughter, Kate, who was clearing out her father's apartment. And in the back of a cupboard, she found some information that looked like it had been to Australia and back. And this was obviously the information from Evelyn's personal papers that had been sent to me 20 years ago. So she sent me a lot of the information from those, which included a lot of photographs which would have been taken by Bill of him and Evelyn's son, Stephen, in the 1920s and 30s. Most of these had never been published before, never been seen before. Some of them, in fact, were damaged, and I had to pay a conservative to separate them and got some beautiful images, which ended up in the book. So that was the cherry on top, getting these fantastic photographs at the very last minute.
Once the book comes out, treat that push a bit like a job. You might have produced a heartbreaking work of staggering genius. It may be your baby, it may be your life and soul, but it also is just a product. And in some ways that makes it easier to think about. You just become quite pragmatic. You know, you visit bookstores, you see how it's going, invite people to review the book, send it out for review as well. Use networks, places that you might have visited or studied, but your hobbies, your sporting clubs, families, family friends, workmate.
What truth are you trying to express? Whether it's fiction or something more real or something out of the ordinary. You build your world around characters and keep them human and more humane. Or like keep them even just relatable, even if they were just kind of just aliens and species. But the best part about it, don't stress about being perfect, because at the end of the day, it's just can't turn out perfect. It's more like a trial and error about. I remember my earlier episodes from episode one, I didn't even start into a story. It was actually more a script, but then I started getting more episodes and like I started looking at the other ones. I was like, you know, we all have that kind of cringe factor and all that kind of stuff, but it's more about being focused on being authentic and most importantly, stay consistent and true to your own tone and style.
People had very defined roles in our society today. We've lost a lot of that. And some of it's been good, but some of it's been bad. Have some good take the good bits from the past and incorporate them more into our everyday lives. I definitely think manners, romance, and the high society aspect of it. There's a whole genre called billionaire romance, where the men are highly successful, wealthy billionaires. It's extremely popular, and it's similar to the period I write in, because I write about the billionaires of the Regency period. It makes life more pleasurable to think of these beautiful scenes that can be created because you have wealth.
I was sort of being bombarded by every side, so I thought, well, maybe I wasn't done writing about Siet. I did want to steer very clear of the Siet Kid narrative, and I wanted to concentrate on some universal themes like friendship and acceptance, with the main underlying message there being salty is that friends should always accept you as you are. You shouldn't have to hide who you are with your friends. And Dara learns throughout the book that sometimes the friends you want are not the friends you need. And as adults, I think that's an important message as well, because we do, and we're people pleasers. We spend a lot of time trying to please other people and forgetting about what makes us happy.
I mean, I don't set out to write a book about abandoned trees. I don't set out to write a book about grief. I don't set out to write a book about friendship. They're woven into the story. And then when I've written it and when my publisher, we have a look at it together, we say, oh, that's about grief or that's about fear. That's not what I write to start with. What I write to start with is a story that I want to read. And hopefully, you know, it might stay with me if it's one just for me. It might go further and get published if it's one that gets a nod, like Bear and Rat have, and certainly like Dragonfolding has.
How do we ever know we're ready to be a leader? Do we portray certain traits or have certain skills before stepping into the role? So that kind of sets us up for success. Or once we're in the role, do we then kind of grow and develop those skills? Is it a nature versus nurture activity? You know, is it, there's a lot that goes into thinking about being a manager and a leader. And I think the journey itself is very personal. You know, I really do. The thinking that management is easy, that being a leader is easy, is actually false. With the leadership recipe, I really try to open folks' eyes to that fact. Mm. And I run a program called So You Want to Be a Manager. And part of that is so that I can stand up in front of groups or over Zoom sessions with my hands on my hips saying, so you want to be a manager, you know, exclamation point, which is actually so it's not a question, it's kind of a statement. And it's actually the title of the first chapter of the book. And that's to take folks through this journey of what it's actually like.
Thought that, you know, the Australian bush has always had this sort of sense of it's foreboding, alluring, right back to Picnic at Hanging Rock, you know, the story. So I really wanted to sort of bring the bush into it, which surrounds the town. I also wanted to make it just Australian. It's got the climate, so it's, you know, opens with bushfire, it's got thunderstorms, it's got the heat, then it's got the bats and the snakes and the flies and all that. So it's sort of creating the atmosphere of Australia. I wanted to be sort of a vivid setting that also had a sense of, you know, a little bit of danger, like, do we venture out into the bush? Do we venture? Yeah, and then I brought in sort of references to bush rangers and gold rush and, you know, Indigenous people.
They want to be the people that were like, I knew them before they were famous. For me, it was allowing people to come in and get to know me in a certain way, find ways to communicate my story so others can feel seen and heard. And then you can use that platform to talk about the things you're doing. Mm. So I talk about being a writer and being neurodivergent. Like, how did I write 3 kids' books all at once without having a mental breakdown? Trick is, I did have a mental breakdown.
I'm working in Manhattan. I'm getting all dressed up. I got to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, get all this suit on and tie, drive to the railroad station or to my bus stop, which I used most of the time, and get on this bus, go to Manhattan in the traffic, never know when I'm going to get home because of the weather and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm not home until 7 o'clock at night, and it's just a crazy life, and they're not paying me anything. So in 1979, I was, 34 years old. My investment portfolio was making 5 times the income that my job was.
Wow.
So I, you know, I got my hand on it. Bye, guys. I'm leaving. And I said, I'm going to do this for other people. So that's what I've been doing ever since, telling people, hey, wake up. You don't need to grow the market value. It'll take care of itself. You just keep building income and reinvesting that income. You'll have plenty of market value. But you also have the income, and you'll be in a position where you don't really care which way the market goes.
Many of you are going to be solopreneurs. Some of you have companies, but you're the entrepreneur behind the company. So you're the champion behind the brand. 2 things. Number one, get the what is a brand part right. I will say it again. And 2 is come from your heart. Number one, what is a brand? Don't think your brand is what you think it is. It's not what you think it is. You can describe it for an hour. It doesn't matter what you say. Your brand is the perception in the mind of the individual you most want to impact. And maybe that's a company, and maybe it's a type of a woman or a type of a man or a team or a couple, but it is that type of person that you really want to impact. And maybe there's several of them and you do them one at a time. It's the perception in their mind. That's your brand. You worry with the perception in the mind of your most important target audience, whom you clearly see impacting and you really want to impact.
So there you have it, folks, a mid-year mashup of all guests who have appeared on the show since January 2025. thank you so much to each and every one of the guests who has appeared on the podcast since January. Your wealth of firsthand lived experience and knowledge in the field of business, books, writing, publishing, genre, overcoming personal turmoil, discoverability of oneself through various art forms has all been incredible. And even if each episode isn't something you feel is applicable to you, you should give them a listen, as I personally say I have grown both professionally and personally and learned something from each and every one of my guests that I've spoken to. And not just this year, you know, the whole 4 years of podcasting. I look forward to the next bunch of guests for the second half of the year and sharing all they have to bring on the podcast. If you would like to be considered as a guest on the Hybrid Author Podcast or utilize advertising opportunities, please pitch me over at joanne@hybridauthor.com.au. Next time on the Hybrid Author Podcast, we have Peter Gunn on bringing epic poetry back and the Amazons. Peter Gunn is a US Air Force vet, avid bodybuilder, coffee connoisseur, and poet who strives to bring epic poetry back from the past. Peter reinvents this narrative style in his masterpiece, The Amazons. I wish you well in your author adventure this week. That's it for me. Bye for
now. That's the end for now, authors. I hope you are further forward in your author adventure after listening, and I hope you'll listen next time. Remember to head on over to the Hybrid Author website at www.hybridauthor.com.au to get your free author pass. It's bye for now.